Welcome to the Elizabeth Cunningham Show, courageously expanding love with me, Elizabeth Cunningham. Has the way that love has arisen in you seemed out of place or even taboo? My mission is to expand the conversation of love in the world. Is it possible to have deep, loving, healthy relationships? Have you ever been curious about having more than one relationship or partner at a time? Get ready to transform in love. Be courageous and set yourself free. In this show, we talk about relationships, sex, love, and the ways we wish we could be, but never thought were possible. I shed light on things that are not always talked about with conversations about expanding love. The Elizabeth Cunningham Show starts now.
All right, welcome to another week of the Elizabeth Cunningham Show, courageously expanding in love. And today we are talking about riding the relationship escalator with Michelle High. And before I get to introducing Michelle, I just want to have a reminder that the Elizabeth Cunningham Show is live every Tuesday at 3 p.m. on the Transformation Network Facebook page, and is then aired on YouTube and podcast every Thursday. So all links are in the show notes. So all you have to do is just click on the links in the show notes and you are all good to go. So on today's episode, we'll be talking with Michelle about the relationship escalator, mononormativity, what that looks like from her perspective as a solo polyamorous with relationship anarchy leanings. And we're going to get into what all of that means on the show. Michelle High is from Portland, Oregon, and runs the page Polyamorous While Asian, which seeks to normalize non-monogamy and amplify the voices of other POC who are significantly underrepresented in non-monogamous communities. She works to educate from an intersectional lens and offers peer support sessions and touches on topics related to body confidence, sex positivity, and more. Michelle, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk.
Oh, beautiful. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And these are some of my favorite topics to talk about. And so I'm really excited to have you on the show. And so we're just going to get right into it. And so what I introduced you with, which was the relationship escalator, also mononormativity. And we've talked on my show a little bit about mononormativity, but I do want to kind of go over what that means a little bit. And we've also talked on the show about solo polyamory, but we haven't touched that much on relationship anarchy, and especially your like relationship anarchy leaning. So I'm super interested what you mean by that, but backing all the way up, what is the relationship escalator?
Yeah, I mean, basically, I love the visual of the relationship escalator because I feel like it does such a good job of just illustrating the point. But more or less, it's the societal scripts that go along with romantic relationships. Basically, like, oh, you date for a while, you know, you get engaged, maybe meet the parents, get married, move in, yada, 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 retire with your 401k till death do you part. Yeah, and it's called the escalator because it's more like you kind of step onto it and then you kind of coast. Not to say that it isn't any work or that it doesn't require any effort, but that's like the most conventionally accepted kind of script or journey for right. A lot of people in romantic relationships.
Recognized, yeah. Right. Or assumed, mm-hmm. Like it's yeah. Just assumed. It's like, oh, now you're dating. Okay, when are you mm-hmm. going to get it married? Okay, mm-hmm. you're married. When are you going to have kids?
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
Oh,
and it's always weird.
Yeah.
If you say
yeah.
like, oh no, I don't want to have kids. And people are like taken aback. Like what? Like, especially, I feel like, especially if you're a woman, like with a lot of these questions, definitely gender differences. And like, I mean, it feels very applicable, especially in these political times, but yes. Yeah. So like it can be very subtle and kind of insidious how, you know, not specifically mandatory, but how the pressure is toward it being like the compulsory way to go about things.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think too that how, like, how one of the ways in which I see it really ingrained is that people are always like, well, I need to find my person. Right. So, like, before the kids one, but specifically with getting a relationship, is like, oh, I need to find my person. I'm not going to be complete without my person. How do you know that the person that you're with is the one? And so I feel like those questions are like pervasive and persistent, and like, I mean, there's billion-dollar industries based off of just those questions. Yeah. So I really think that, again, and I do, you know, recognize that, like, being in, you know, if you are in a monogamous relationship and you are seeking the one, it's not a bad thing. It's just recognizing that it is kind of the assumed way that it will go.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's always important to point out with the escalator, because I think sometimes some people can feel defensive about it, being like, oh, you know, what if I want to, you know, get married and have kids and all that? And it's like, that's good, you know, like, and that's the important thing, is if you want to make the choice and you have the choice, the where it gets iffy and where it gets kind of bad is when the choice is taken away, or, you know, either through laws or through social pressures, that choice is taken away from you.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. So that kind of leads to the next question, which is, what is mononormativity?
Totally ties into that. Mononormativity is basically how it sounds, where it's just like monogamy is seen as the norm and is seen as more or less the one right way. And anything outside of that seems deviant or lesser than, this can have a lot of impacts with, you know, social life, even like your work life and the opportunities that you're exposed to, the acceptance that you get from society in general.
Well, I think acceptance is a really key word, because, you know, you mentioned people getting defensive earlier, but I think you can go beyond that with some people, where some people feel threatened by, you know, the outside of monogamous relationships, that it threatens, I don't know, like, I'm still trying to figure this out. Maybe you can help me out a little bit. Sometimes I'm like, what are you so threatened by this?
Like, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that it does, it sometimes it goes beyond just defensive, but it gets to like, oh, well, if people aren't being monogamous, then monogamy is then threatened by different types of relationships.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know if it's almost this cultural, like, black and white sort of thinking that ties in with stuff like the scarcity mentality, where it's like, in order for one person or one side to win, another side has to lose. Like, there is no win-win situation. It's just like it's like a cultural war all the time. So it's like, monogamy is king, and monogamy, and I think especially in the United States, a lot of it is tied with like Christianity and things like that. Yeah, if monogamy is seen as not the one right way toward almost like salvation, or just like the best way to go about things, like, this is, you know, like, this is morally good, then in that black and white thinking, like, oh, if non-monogamy exists, like, there's no room for nuance. There's no room for both. It's like, it's either, you know, the sanctity of marriage and monogamy and the nuclear family, or this like anarchy and like chaotic, that hippy dippy free love stuff that totally failed. And
right. Like, we're all just dancing around naked on drugs, basically.
Exactly. Which, like, you know, don't threaten me with a good time, but
I know, right?
But yeah, it's like this moral outrage, and it's just so tied into this morality and a sort of like the like purity culture and whatnot, where to kind of indulge is bad, and to like, oh, I don't know, all those things, like, to experience too much pleasure is bad, and whatnot. So yeah, a lot of it's messed up.
No, that's beautifully said and beautifully stated. And I think that you hit on a lot of really good points, because I truly believe that. I truly believe that it is all of those things. And we do live in this culture where, you know, if you're not the best, then you're the worst.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's no in between. There's no right. just existing and just being a human being.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when we talk about, especially in, you know, polyamory, and definitely if you get into more like LGBTQ, where we start talking about like spectrums of things, right? And spectrums of ways of being, and that you can fall somewhere on the spectrum. And, you know, if you fall on the spectrum somewhere and you find yourself there, yay, good for you. Like, I celebrate you and your identity and like how mm-hmm. you feel. Where there is, you know, in the rest of the culture, there does seem to be this like, if you're not right, then you're wrong.
Exactly. And like all these boxes, like this, not wanting a spectrum because a lot of people want boxes to be like, how am I supposed to treat you? You know, like whether it comes to gender or sexuality or relationship orientation, people want to know immediately without necessarily having to get to know you. How am I supposed to treat you? Am I supposed to treat you well, or am I supposed to treat you poorly? Basically.
I don't think that I could have stated that any better. That's my experience with people as well too. And I think that that's why that's so well stated, because that really hits home, because that is how we experience each other. It's like, oh, I need to know your category. I need to know your box. I need to know your label. So that way I have no thought in just like, and this is how I get to treat you. Mm-hmm. Right. And we can look at that in like a good, bad way, but we can also just look at that in like a blanket statement way. Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then I do want to ask before we go on our break, what do you mean by relationship anarchy leaning? What does that mean for you?
Yeah. I also feel this way because relationship anarchy, I think, like in the name itself, is a political statement with regard to relationship orientation. And I think of it this way often with my political leanings, is that like, I don't exactly know what to label myself specifically because I haven't done all the reading yet. So like with relationship anarchy, I have read like Andy Nordgren's like Relationship Manifesto, which is great. Highly recommend, you know, anyone to read that. So I agree with, I think, basically most of what is said there, you know, like mm-hmm. Respecting autonomy and, you know, not prioritizing hierarchy and all that good stuff. Would I call myself full on relationship anarchist? I'm not sure. So I just say relationship anarchy leanings at the very least. Yeah.
No, I hear that. And especially since it does have such a deep political connotation, I think there is like this, again, going back to the defensiveness, like you have to defend like your identity. Mm-hmm. You know, when you make such a statement, you know, people expect that you defend yourself. And so I also really get that, just like being wanting to be a little bit more informed about how you might want to label yourself, or like how you feel about wherever you fall on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
And, you know, just to reiterate, wherever you fall on the spectrum, I super celebrate you. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. All right. We are going to go on a break. And when we get back, I would love to talk to you about amplifying POC voices, because that is something that you do. You know, your handle is polyamorous while Asian. It's something that's very near and dear to your heart. And so I would love to tie that into how you represent, you know, the non-monogamous community and the intersectionalities that exist in the non-monogamous community that don't really get talked about often. Mm-hmm. So I would love to get into that after break, and we will be right back.
Hi, I'm Amber, your weekly host of the Heart Leader Podcast, where heart and mind align on transformationtalkradio.com. I'm here with co-host Austin, and we'd like to know, do you have a passion to make a greater global impact? Are you ready to embrace leading with heart and love? If so, join us and our global community of over 1 million strong on this journey to become heart leaders who change the world. Each episode brings heart-centered connection, building stronger relationships, communities, and businesses. Take a deeper dive into what it means to be a heart leader. For more information, visit www.suivera.org. We look forward to seeing you in the Suivera community.
Are you ready for the real results you want?
Don't miss the new show. Why wait? Look better, feel better, be your best from the inside out with me, Georgette LePage. Join Dr. Pat Basile and me monthly to tackle topics that are often seen as roadblocks to weight loss. Each discussion offers you practical solutions for your transformational changes. Find out more about show dates and times or connect with me directly at georgettelepage.com.
Too many people go too long forgetting their true soul purpose. Join me, Gina Gale Gray, every fourth Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific in Savvy Solutions. Take the journey back to me with a Freedom Coach and Oracle on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Find your soul oceans now in my show. Learn how you can release the wall around your heart and follow your emotional being back to connection and compassion. Visit AnywhereMindBodySoul.com.
We are courageously expanding love on my new show, The Elizabeth Cunningham Show, every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Join me and my guests where we talk about relationships, sex, love, and the ways we wish we could be but never thought were possible. Visit ElizabethAnnCunningham.com and subscribe.
Tune in to Knowledge Book Radio with host Marge Potasek, the fourth Tuesday each month at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Through many experiences, Marge was led to the Knowledge Book, a gift to humanity in its transition to the golden age that provides truth and answers. She now shares information from the Knowledge Book with you monthly on TransformationTalkRadio.com on Knowledge Book Radio. For more information, visit usa.theknowledgebook.com.
Eventually I'm going to be like Ellen and I'm going to like dance in to the show and have my guests dance into the show. All right, welcome back from break. This is the Elizabeth Cunningham Show, where we are courageously expanding love. We are talking to Michelle High, and I mean, we've already gone really deep just in the first section. And what we talked about before, if you missed it, we talked about what is the relationship escalator, which we're going to bring up a little bit again. What is mononormativity? What does relationship anarchy leaning mean? But now, Michelle, I really wanted to ask you about something that is really near and dear to your heart, which is the intersectionality of race and non-monogamy, and really calling forward, calling in, you know, the discrepancies that you see, and also just your experience. So what, like, first of all, like, this might sound like a really obvious question, but why is this so important to you to talk about the intersectionality of race and non-monogamy?
Yeah, right. And like, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, it's one of those obvious questions, but like the fact that we have to talk about it a lot makes it apparent that it's something that has to be, you know, continue to, you know, be answered. So when I first started this account is because like I was trying to find like other polyamorous Asians, especially... So I was just trying to find other polyamorous Asians. And I was like, it just seems hard to find on social media. Like, I know we're out there. I mean, I'm out here. We're out here somewhere. we definitely exist. But there was just like a dearth of representation. So I'm like, yeah, why not? And also at this point, like lockdowns had just started as well. So I'm like, going to be home. might as well just be on the internet all the time.
like we all did. So
Exactly. Yeah. I've got a lot of time on my hands now. With regard to like race and polyamory, like for example, I live in Portland, Oregon, and Portland, Oregon has a, you know, not to sugarcoat anything, it has a very like a history like steeped in white supremacy, and that is reflected in the demographics of the city today. Like, it is, I think, still the like widest major city in the United States, with like more than 75% of the people in the Portland area are white. And of course, that's definitely reflected in non-monogamy community. Oftentimes in non-monogamy community, or even in like sex positive spaces, sex clubs and munches and things like that, predominantly white, especially since those are more fringe things. And, talking about like acceptance early on in the show, people in marginalized communities have to fight harder to gain even like baseline acceptance. And that doesn't even have to, not just race, race, class, disability, just like so many other, different ways that, society marginalizes, people. And I've also seen other, creators talk about race. Like there's a lot of black polyamorous creators that I really looked up to, and they talk about race a lot, and I really admire the way that they talk about race head on and stuff. Alicia over polyamorous black girl, I just love the way that she very head on tackles white
she
supremacy.
She really does. She absolutely does. Yeah. I love her account.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. And then books like Love's Not Colorblind by Kevin Patterson, where it specifically talks about, the intersection of polyamory and race and issues that a white partner might not think about if they introduce a POC partner to to a space that is predominantly white or whatever, where you don't even think about the either overt racism or the microaggressions that make a person feel uncomfortable and unwelcome. And so I think this is an important thing for a lot of, white people who are non-monogamous to think about just because you're not being specifically exclusive does not mean that you're being inclusive. Doesn't mean that you're creating a space that is welcoming to, people who aren't white. And also I just think it's just important that representation isn't the end all be all. It isn't, the key to liberation or whatnot. It isn't just sometimes it can just be kind of a lip service type of thing. But I think it can be important as a part of a wider way to actually, create more inclusion and actually redistribute power and influence, to see people who are not white or not just cis or able-bodied or just all sorts. It's important to see that people who aren't just, cishet and white and able-bodied and neurotypical and all that in positions of power and leadership and being able to just exist. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and thank you for sharing all of that. And, as I am a white person, one of the ways in which I learn about these things is through representation, because otherwise it's not on my radar, right? As someone who's white, that's my privilege, right? Mm-hmm. I don't have to deal, for lack of a better way to put it, but if you're white, that's part of your privilege, is that you don't have to quote unquote deal with that. Right. Mm-hmm. You do have to go out of your way to learn to see those things happening. And like you said, there's microaggressions that happen that, white people might not even be aware of, because it really just isn't on your radar, and you really do have to do the digging yourself. Mm-hmm. And so, like you said, representation is not the solution, but it is certainly an access point to which we can, have a grander conversation. And mm-hmm. also, representation really does save lives. We look at the, talking about people who are trans, and that's also a hot topic issue right now, and things that are happening in our country that are pertaining to trans people. And being able to see people who look like you, who feel the same way that you do, who have similar experiences as you, allow people to be I'm not alone. I'm not mm-hmm. suffering alone.
Exactly. Right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I really do believe that representation saves lives. Like you said, it's not the solution, but it is really important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I see my, the little corner that I exist in on Instagram, like, yeah, I do want that more to be a space where just like just being visibly me, as opposed to just being a platform for like white consumption or something like that. You know, that's not what I want. And if anything, I'll like, you know, try to like push up against that, where it's like, this is just being me. I am polyamorous. I am like, you know, East Asian, parents are from like China and Taiwan. This is just the way that I live. I don't, like with social media, there's always ways that we kind of curate in a way, like even if we try to be authentic, there's still a curation involved. But yeah, like I'm trying not to make myself just be palatable for white people, you know, and their consumption and being like, oh yes, I'm learning from a POC or whatever. But just like, yeah, just kind of trying to live my life as best as I can, just as a person who happens to be polyamorous and Asian, and hopefully other people who are polyamorous and Asian and, you know, whatnot can feel like you were saying, we're just like, oh, you know, I'm not alone. I'm not just deviant or super weird, or that like, oh, this can be a viable thing. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and oh man, we're coming up on break, but I do want to ask the question, and maybe we'll start to cover this and come back to it. But I did want to ask the question about the intersectionality between the relationship escalator. It's like, we got relationship escalator, we got non-monogamy, and then we have race, right? And so in this Venn diagram, you know, where do you see the intersectionality of that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, that huge topic. Huge topic, yeah.
Yeah. Let's go on a break. Because we are butting up right against the break, so this is like the perfect stopping point, cliffhanger, if you will, where we're going to bring it all together after break here.
Champion your life with me, Leanne Champion, first and third Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com. That new gym membership might help you get fit, but what about emotional fitness? Jump into the rushing waters of personal growth. Don't waste another minute feeling unfulfilled. Visit championyourlife.com and let's do this together.
One day, I arrived early to meet a friend for lunch. One of the wait staff welcomed me with a beautiful smile. It was everyday magic. We experience this kind of thing all the time, but it was magical because the smile made me feel happy and content. The Sanskrit word for smile is smitam. It means fully blossomed, fully bloomed, and expanded, like an empty field suddenly full of spring flowers. In the same way, a bright smile given freely changes everything. It can warm the heart. It can reassure or inspire or uplift. It can bring joy or lift a burden. Try it for yourself. Smitam, a smile, and discover a little everyday magic. Join me, Sarah Main, on Damayanti, the show for your soul, where we discover everyday uplifting magic together. And check out my website, damayanti.store.
Tune into Hungry for Answers every first and third Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com with me, Robin Clare. I am a recovery coach, professional, and best-selling author, bringing you eye-opening conversations about addiction and groundbreaking tools for recovery. To learn about me and my offerings, visit Clarity.com. That's Clare, Clare-ITY.com.
Are limitations holding you back from living a powerful and authentic life? Are you able to see yourself and others through a lens of empathy and compassion? Tune into Awaken Your Truth with me, Ritika Rose, to discover how to free your mind, heal your life, and embody your power. Second and fourth Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio, YouTube, and across all podcast stations. I'm on a mission to inspire a shift in you, so together we can collectively heal the world. To learn more about me, visit RitikaRose.com.
All right, welcome back to the Elizabeth Cunningham Show, Courageously Expanding in Love, and we are here with the amazing Michelle Hi. We were just talking about on break how this conversation is just flying by because there is so much depth in this conversation, and I really appreciate you being here and sharing all of this because it is such an important topic. So what we left off with before break was the Venn diagram of the relationship escalator, non-monogamy, and also race. And so where do you see these things intersecting, and what's the impact of that?
Right. Yeah. So this is like, often I talk about how, and a lot of people talk about like the political nature of relationships, and that all relationships exist within a political space. They do not exist in a vacuum. And so, the ways that people move through relationships and do relationships aren't always necessarily a political statement. But I like to remind people that like politics basically, like it can feel like such a vague term. Like when we say politics, we have this kind of cloud of, I think, ideas and stuff that goes along with it.
It's almost like a feeling too. Like when someone says politics, there's almost like a gut feeling of like, ooh, that's exciting. Or like, oh, I hate that. Or like, oh my exactly. God, this is going to go badly. Or, you know, yeah.
Yeah. And so like sometimes in comments where it's just like, oh, why do you have to make this political? It's like, well, because politics is about the distribution of power. And so who gets to make choices, who gets to, have influence, who gets resources. And that exists within relationships, like within relationships, and then how relationships are treated by, you know, its surroundings, the environment, the society. And so, how it ties into like the relationship escalator is that we've basically more or less said that in order to have power and influence, like this doesn't necessarily give you like, make you on top of the world. However, like if you get married and have children and have the house with the white picket fence and the 401k and stuff like that, you are like higher on the escalator. And again, that's why I love the visual of the escalator, because you are seen as more mature, more responsible, more of a person who deserves respect and resources and yada, yada, yada. Whereas someone lower down, like if someone chooses never to marry, someone chooses not to have children, like they might still be, you know, pretty successful in their career and whatnot, but they're not seen as having as much like social capital. Which can have a great degree of influence over the sort of opportunities that one can have, especially again, you know, talking about like gender differences, just talking about like the, you know, like the het binary of just like a man or a woman, like a single man who's in his 40s, it's like, oh, you know, he's just being a man. He's being a successful man. He's had his, you know, eye on the ball on his career, blah, blah, blah. A woman in her 40s who like never married or had kids or whatever, that's a failure.
Oh, what's wrong with her? Yeah.
Exactly. Like, yeah, exactly. What's wrong with her?
There must be something wrong with her. She must be, you know, and like one thing is like, oh, she must be like not worth marrying.
Exactly. Yeah. She's not worth it. And that's just within just like the like cishet kind of binary. And then when you get into like more like, like if you're non-binary, if you're trans, like, oh my God, the hoops that you have to jump through in order to even be seen as like worthy of basic respect. And so that's where like mononormativity, the relationship escalator, that's how like where that ties in the critiques of that. Where it's like, we've decided that there are these certain steps that a person has to take in order to be seen as valuable, to be seen as worthy of being like of receiving resources, you know, without being called like a leech or like, all these things where people are like, oh, you just got to pull yourself up from your bootstraps, stop complaining, stop being a snowflake and all that good stuff. And so then of course, yeah, like tying like race into it, God, especially, I mean, speaking from within like the politics of the United States, the United States was built off of racism, off of white supremacy. And people think like, oh, that was 400 years ago. We've totally, you know, things have totally changed. I'm like, yeah, sure. Some things have changed, but the roots are definitely still showing. Like they pervade everything. We pervade like the kind of access to, you know, basic needs like housing and food and, you know, just the ability to provide for yourself or your family. It just pervades so much of society. And then talking within like non-monogamy, we can talk about like desirability politics, which talks about how it kind of as it sounds, it's like how desirable you are to as a partner, you know, and that tends to be, you know, cishet, white, definitely a class structure to that, where it's like if you have more money and whatnot, you're more desirable. And so I think that's often why like polyamory is seen as like, can we swear here a little bit? Like just so.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So just wanted to check, you know.
Yeah. Thank you for checking. But yeah, absolutely. Usually I've dropped an F-bomb at least once by now.
Right. Okay. Cool. Yeah. But just right. How a lot of people see polyamory, a lot of like POC, like see polyamory as white people shit. Because that is what is mostly represented, and especially like at least middle class, and sometimes like I think there's also like a bit of it that sees non-monogamy as like this rich, like this wealthy kind of eccentric wealthy kind of white person stuff. But yeah, I think there's a reason there. I mean, there are many reasons why polyamory is seen as white people shit. And that also makes it seem like it's not for, I think there's a great quote by Kevin Patterson in Love's Not Colorblind, where it's like, it's easy to say, it's, you know, when you don't see yourself represented in a community, it's easy to come to the conclusion that that community is not for you, you know, to paraphrase. Yeah. And so that anything within that is not accessible to you. You know, like non-monogamy is not accessible to me. It's not something that is for me. It's not something that's good for me. It's maybe something that might be harmful to me, and actually will hold me back. Because like, you know, if you're already playing on hard mode, why make it even harder by being like this non-monogamous weirdo? And oftentimes like with families, like a lot of, like immigrant families can be more conservative as well. Fortunately, like my family, they are conservative leaning, but like I learned early on that like my mom would be okay if I came out as gay. She'd still be weird about it, but she wouldn't disown me or anything like that. I know she has more strict ideas about monogamy, so it's something that I haven't like bothered to bring up with her. But yeah, with families, we don't want to be ostracized from sometimes the only community that we have. And so we're going to play by that community's rules because it's better than being ostracized by everyone. At least we have this haven. And so, God, yeah, I feel like I just went on like all over the place. But
no,
yeah.
I think that that was really well said. It's a rich and deep and entrenched topic, and so there is a lot to say about it, and I think that that was really well said. And I guess my question to you is, being someone who is in that intersectionality, what do you like for yourself, what is something that you practice that has you feel more at home in this intersectionality, or do you not, or is it hard for you?
I mean, I think with the non-monogamy thing, like I started when I was about 18. And so that was like a time of my life where it's like just starting college. And so just figuring out life stuff in general, you know, like, what do I want to be when I grow up still? And all of that. And also like, when I first started college, I majored in computer science because that's what like my mom wanted. And then I eventually like broke away from that because it was like making me very unhappy. And then I chose linguistics and stuff like that. So like those little significant changes that helped kind of, you know, I didn't want to break away from my family. But at the same time, I was realizing that the values that I was developing was very different from a lot of the values that my parents had and that my family has. So, like, it's definitely created a lot of anxiety and still does to this day at some time. But like trying to find more community, trying to find more friends, trying to find more, you know, I don't know, partners and things like that. And, or more, you know, people in general that are like the, you know, the chosen family, and finding more people who, you know, talking about representation again, who kind of embody a different sort of life than I grew up with or that I knew was even possible. Because like being introduced to non-monogamy through a book, I was like, oh, this is a thing that people do? Like, this is something that I thought, you know, do adults share partners? Like, that seems like a thing adults can do, right? But but having a book, right. Yeah, that was like, oh, non-monogamy is a thing that has existed right. in humans and continues to exist. I'm like, oh my God, yeah. So I think continue to just like do things like go to therapy, introspect, and continue to work on reaching out to, you know, loved ones whenever I need help and stuff like that, cultivating that kind of, you know, more community mindedness. And also this, like I call it like an altruistic hedonism, where it's like kind of searching for pleasure, but in a way that like benefits the people around me, where it's like pursuing pleasure in a way that like, oh, it makes me more happy and more able to give. And so I can give to the people around me. And so then the people around me can give more to me and, you know, that kind of cycle. And
oh
so I
gosh.
Think
can
that,
I steal that? Altruistic
oh yeah.
hedonism.
I want people to steal that. I want people oh to just like, yeah. If that
here.
Resonates.
Michelle, hi. Altruistic hedonism. It's going in Wikipedia. Altruistic hedonism termed by Michelle, hi.
Oh my God. On the Elizabeth Cunningham show. Yeah.
On the Elizabeth Cunningham show. That's right.
But yeah. So cultivating that in all sorts of forms, like, I think for me has been my journey. Yeah.
Well, and I really think that that speaks to such a strong sense of self, because you're able to see all of these things, you know, and everything that we've talked about on the show. And, you know, what we've talked about today is like, it's a lot of roadblocks. It's a lot of reasons why not to do something, you know, because mm-hmm. there is, you know, pushback. There are things that, like, with even with your immediate family, where it's like, you know, are they going to accept me if I do this? You know, how is that going to go? Am I going to, you know, lose people that I love? Mm-hmm. And so I think that it really does take, and I'm saying this in general, but I'm also like acknowledging you for just such a strong sense of self and who you are and what's true for you.
Yeah, working on it. Yeah.
You're doing great. You're doing awesome. I think it's really beautiful. Okay, we are going to go on one more break. And then when we come back, we are going to wrap up. We're going to ask our end of show questions. And then you're going to let people know how to get a hold of you if they want to get a hold of you. Speaking of building community. Perfect. All right, so we will be right back.
You are a brilliantly self-aware woman with a big heart and a cycle of dissatisfying relationships. Maybe you're drawn to a man who lights a fire in you but leaves you feeling amiss. Does that sound about right? My name is Love Coach Mariah, and I help women navigate the rough waters of rocky relationship from push and pull to peace of mind. Learn more at lovecoachmariya.com. The first call is on me.
There isn't a magic pill to creating your healthy lifestyle, yet it doesn't have to be hard or feel impossible. Health works from the inside out, connecting both your body and your mind. Georgette LePage lives and breathes what she teaches, so allow her to be living proof of what can work for you. Connect with her now for a free 30-minute discovery session to see what results you are looking for and how she can help you get them. Visit GeorgetteLePage.com.
Yeah. Your own innate brilliance already lives inside of you. Come discover it so you can shine brightly in this world. Join me, your host, Adrienne Cobb, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, during My Wild Magic on TransformationTalkRadio.com and get answers to who you are and where you belong. To learn more about me and the show, visit MyWildMagic.com. Again, that's MyWildMagic.com.
Stuck in a roundabout of dysfunction? Learn how to speak your truth to power with host Dr. Kathy Aubert. Create real change with smart tools and smart strategies. No frills, no fluff, just life-changing conversations to help get you where you want to be. Extend your reach and become an agent for real change with Kathy Aubert. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyaubert.com. That's drkathyaubert.com.
There is divinity within you. Join Lisa Belth on her show, The Unshakable Living Show, Supernaturally and Divinely Unshakable, twice a month, and find that divinity that you deserve. Lisa will help you feel encouraged, empowered, and realize that you're not alone on your journey. With Lisa, address the foundation, the frame, and the finish of your dreams and become truly unshakable.
Welcome back to the Elizabeth Cunningham Show, Courageously Expanding Love. And I cannot tell you how much the phrase courageously expanding love applies to Michelle High and what we've been talking about on today's episode, because it really does take courage to deconstruct the assumption of like how life is supposed to go and be like, no, that's actually not true for me. That's not actually how I feel. I feel this way. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that you've just done an amazing job at sharing, you know, what the relationship escalator is, what mononormativity is. You know, we talked about intersectionality and race and privilege. I mean, we were just on break and we were like, man, like we're just gonna hunker down and have a marathon because we're gonna talk about all of this.
Yeah, we're gonna continue to talk about this. We're gonna continue unraveling slowly the sanctity of mononormativity. Yeah.
I am so here for it. But really, thank you so much. Michelle, I think what I want to do is I actually just want to go into the last kind of questions for the show, and then we'll talk about, you know, how people can get a hold of you. So first question is, what does love mean to you?
Oh God, I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, get back to me in like 10 years, maybe. But like as a kid, child of divorce, had like a single mom who like worked really hard and stuff, and like she would tell my sister and I love you. Like there was a time where she was like explicitly said every day, I like will remember to say I love you. And sometimes you could tell that, you know, because she's tired and stuff, she would forget, like under the wire, like right before we go to bed, she'll say I love you. I think as a kid it was kind of nice and I really appreciate her intention, but at the same time it like really made me question, what does that mean? Like does it become an obligation, you know, the I love you? What does my mother's love mean? To me, I won't speak to everyone. To me, I think it's a lot of action. Like love is spoken through action. And I think like action that shows like respect and, you know, sees me as the person who I am. Oh God, there's like something in my throat for that. All right. Sorry about that.
You're good.
But yeah, love is having good boundaries and seeing and respecting other people's boundaries. I think that's probably where I'm at so far with the love thing. Yeah.
Yeah. What, besides respecting your boundaries, what's something that someone could do to show that they love you?
Like, I think for me, one of my highest love languages is like acts of service. And so, I think the way that I feel loved the most is when I'm feeling like my lowest and I'm still accepted. That I'm feeling my lowest and the person doesn't run away or doesn't just like try to ignore it or try to just gloss over it. And they actually maybe like come down with me, and they don't even have to necessarily do much, but just not running away is love to me.
Yeah. Like, hey, I see you. I see you here. I'm here with you.
Exactly.
I'm not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really beautiful. Thank you. If people get nothing else, what do you hope that they got out of this episode?
Oh man. That, oh geez. Yeah. How do we condense this episode? Basically what I want people to take away, whether they're monogamous or non-monogamous or, you know, somewhere on the spectrum, wherever you are on the spectrum, is that love and relationships, relating to people, connecting to people, is so much more expansive than what we're mostly taught and what is mostly supported by, you know, our surrounding society. That connection can exist in so many different areas along a spectrum. And that labels can be helpful to help, you know, guide and whatever, but they shouldn't become more boxes that we use to restrict ourselves and to restrict our others, because while scarcity is manufactured in a lot of real ways, it does not have to dictate our mentality for relationships in general.
Yeah, beautiful. And what is one action that people could take, either out of listening to this episode or just from that one takeaway? What's an action that people could take?
I think it's not very showy, but just a lot of introspection about, you know, what their relationships look like right now. What aspects of them do they really love, you know, that helps them feel like they're thriving as opposed to just surviving? And like surviving, especially in these times, it's like, can't shame anyone for doing what they can just to, you know, survive day by day. Right. You know, all of us are like doing that to a degree, but trying to pinpoint what it is that helps make you thrive, that helps make you feel like, you know, restores that kind of verve for life and helps you feel like you have a lot of support to give and a lot of support to receive. You know, what aspects of that, you know, resonates with you in that way. What kind of things, vice versa, like, you know, don't serve you? You know, are you trying to serve the idea of certain relationships, or are your relationships actually serving your needs? And so I think that's a super huge thing for, you know, for anyone to think about. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And, you know, on that note too, when you're looking at where is this relationship thriving or where am I thriving in this relationship, that, yeah, it can be really small, right?
Mm-hmm.
It can just be like, I'm thriving when I wake up and my partner's laying next to me.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly.
Or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. Okay, Michelle, thank you so much for being on the show. How can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, I'm pretty easy to find. Just Polyamorous While Asian on Instagram. And I also have my website where I also post, you know, everything that I post on Instagram there. So it's easy to read there. Polyamorouswhileasian.com.
Perfect. Perfect. And we do have all of your links in the show notes. And so anybody who's listening right now, if you want to follow Michelle, if you want to get a hold of her, you do, you know, peer-to-peer support sessions as well. Please follow the links in the show notes. And again, Michelle, thank you so much for being on the show today. It has been an absolute pleasure to have you. Thank you, every single person, for listening in. My contact is also in the show notes as well. So if anybody wants to get a hold of me, suggestions for episodes or anything like that, and regardless of what piece of media you are listening to on this, if you want to rate or subscribe, make sure that you tune in every Tuesday while we're live and every Thursday when we air the episode. Until next time, everyone, keep loving.
You have been listening to The Elizabeth Cunningham Show, Courageously Expanding Love, with me, Elizabeth Cunningham. Tune in live every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com, where we shed light on relationships, sex, love, and the ways we wish we could be but never thought were possible. Learn to love yourself and create the relationships you want. Connect with me at ElizabethAnnCunningham.com. That's ElizabethAnnCunningham.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.